Hi, I'm Brandon Poe, founder of Poe Group Advisors and creator of the Accounting Practice Academy. You are listening to the Accountant's Flight Plan podcast, where we talk about stuff in the accounting world. If you're looking to buy or sell a practice, we are the premier accounting practice intermediary firm in the industry. Check us out at poegroupadvisors.com. If you're a firm owner looking to build a more profitable practice while actually reducing owner hours, sign up for our practice management workshop, which only runs a few times per year. Learn more at accountingpracticeacademy.com. Well, welcome to the Accountant's Flight Plan podcast. I am honored to have another EO member on the podcast today, Spencer Shannon. And he has the rare and unique combination of speaking both the language of accounting and the language of entrepreneurship. He's a 20-year CPA and chartered accountant. And as an entrepreneur, he's owned businesses in manufacturing, construction, cold storage, that's an unusual one, real estate, and now financial services, with the goal of making accounting not suck. Spencer is now the CEO and founder of Shift Financial Insights, providing ridiculously simple accounting and financial insights for businesses on the rise. He's the best-selling author of Entrepreneurs, the surprisingly simple path to financial clarity. He also has a highly rated international, he is a highly rated international speaker. And you deliver, I guess you probably deliver a lot of presentations for EO.
I've done quite a few, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so he's done a lot of keynote presentations and workshops to industry membership associations, such as EO. And so welcome, Spencer, that's quite a bio.
Yeah, thanks so much. Excited to be here. Thank you for feeling I have enough to share with your audience today.
Yeah, well, I got to ask about the cold storage. How did that slip into the CPA's business interests?
Well, funny, there's actually a pretty tight CPA connection there. So my dad's a CPA as well. He's a tax specialist. And many, many years ago, he got involved in a company in Canada called Versatile. And it was it had three cold storage facilities in it. And the reason he got interested in the first place is because cold storage equipment was actually designated for tax purposes in Canada as manufacturing and production equipment. So it actually had a higher write-off, faster write-off for tax purposes. So he actually originally did it as a shelter and then discovered it was a really good business and it actually was quite profitable. So he was in that, he has his own tax practice as well. Not as well, I don't have a tax practice. He has his own tax practice. And also stayed involved in the cold storage industry for a number of years. He was part of a quite a large one that went public and then left that. And then him and I became partners in, we had four facilities in Washington State for about 10 or 12 years.
Oh, that's okay. That's yeah, it's funny what CPAs find themselves getting into.
Always.
Yeah, so... Well, we'd like to get to know you a little better still. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and how you chose accounting? It sounds like Dad was a CPA. So just tell us a little bit about your selection choice.
You know, I wish I could say it was super intentional. The reality is, you know, I was leaving university and I was however you are, old you are when you're in university. And I went straight to university. So I didn't really have time off. And so I was 20 or whatever, and I didn't know what to do. And genuinely, I was talking to my dad. He's like, well, there's this thing called it in Canada at the time, it was called the CA program. And he explained it a bit to me and I shrugged, I said, okay. And I applied to a couple firms and, you know, the firm that he had done his work at, and eventually he was a partner before he left, they hired me. And I think they hired me because of all the partners, you know, he was a partner to everybody who was a partner when I joined. So all of my partners got to sort of take out on me whatever they had from him when he was the partner and he was articling. I was then their article student. So that's how this cycle came about. You know, and if I'm totally honest and candid, I really did not enjoy the program. I kind of just stuck it out because A, I didn't know what else to do. B, I'm not a quitter. And C, I knew a couple of letters after my name wouldn't be a bad thing. So it was kind of just kind of happenstance at the time. I mean, I'm glad it was the happenstance, but you know, I it's not like this was always my dream, to be totally honest.
Well, that's similar to my story. I stumbled into accounting almost haphazardly and started out with Ernst & Young coming out of school and just instantly realized I needed to do something a little different. So, you know, it's not for everybody.
I was on the Coopers and Lybrand side pre-Price-Waterhouse Coopers merger.
Yeah. I mean, those big firms, it takes a while before you're doing interesting work. You're kind of grinding. Yeah. At least when I came up, I don't know what it's like now, but.
Well, I mean, I can tell you when I started, we had 2 computers for the whole floor that you had to wheel back to your desk. So I was definitely in the green pen tick box, you know, doing check marks down the side, was the most interesting work I had. And I think at the time I didn't realize the work could actually get more interesting. And like, I didn't realize that the advisory side is actually, that part to me is quite exciting. Yeah. So I didn't see that back in the day. And I just sort of, you know, pulled the ripcord as soon as I graduated and went on to more the entrepreneurial side. But like, how lucky am I to have that foundation, you know, as I'm sure you well know, like,
I agree.
The painful work really was the foundation to do everything I'm doing now.
Yeah, all that grinding, it does prepare you for a lot of things. But, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for those shortcuts and, you know, paying dues in public accounting for 15 years just wasn't in the cards for me. So,
well, I still pay my dues.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Shift Financial Insights. Sure. Tell us just first of all, what is it? And how you started it? What led you to start it?
If I can, I'll actually kind of flip those two questions because I think it flows a little bit. The idea for Shift actually came at an EO Entrepreneurs Organization event. And since you're an EO member as well, that's how we met. I don't know, have you seen Alan Miltz speak?
Yes, actually, he was on my podcast.
Okay, so I actually mentioned Alan in my book is where the idea came from. Now, I think Alan's brilliant. Now, if you've seen him speak and you're as financial literate as you are, like, I don't know about you, but I had to be like super focused to be like, okay, exactly, you know, like what's going on here? Okay, I got it. And I was really, really focused to keep up because what he's talking about, if for those that haven't seen him, is basically for entrepreneurs, how do the banks look at your books versus how we as entrepreneurs look at our books, or how most entrepreneurs don't look at their books probably. And he tries to bridge that gap and he's really brilliant. And I agree with everything he says. The reality though, is he talks really fast and it's while it's not technical, there is an element of kind of higher level financial knowledge needed. And so at one point during his talk, I actually corrected something. He did a formula and I said, well, don't you mean 4.28 or whatever it was? And he's like, oh yeah, you're right. And the whole room burst out laughing because it's a bunch of entrepreneurs that frankly, it was going over their heads, at least the detail. And so there was a guy, another EO member at my table, and he looked at me and he said, hey, can you help me implement this in my business? Because I know it's important, but I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. And that was just this light bulb moment. Now, I had exited, I've had a few different operating businesses and I'd exited all of them quite recently before that. And I was in this mode of, I was doing some advisory, I was doing working with some tech startups in Vancouver. There's quite a robust tech startup scene here. And then I was like, wait a second. There's this bridge between entrepreneurs, how entrepreneurs think and how they operate and their lack of financial sophistication to the such a rich amount of information that can be mined if done right. And I was like, yeah, I can help you with that. Sorry, it looks like you're going to say something.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, I know what you mean about you think as when I joined EO, coming into an organization with a lot of successful business people, accomplished, people who've had businesses for a long time. As a CPA, I was a little surprised by how they don't really understand their numbers as well as I felt like they should.
I mean, shocked might be a better word than surprised. And I see a lot of financials now. And likewise, like I see, you know, people that have been in business 10, 15 years and still like, you know, I had somebody who's a friend of mine, amazing person, amazing entrepreneur, kind of whisper in my ear one day, it's like, I'm not getting the information I need to run my business. I don't really know what information I need. I just know I'm not getting it. And yeah. that was so prevalent. So after kind of hearing exactly what we're talking about over and over, I'm like, wait a second. You know, my old controller is amazing. I'm like, you know, if I just had Anna, I could actually put her into a bunch of these companies. Cause like a $2 million business doesn't need a full-time bookkeeper. They need somebody who can get that. And they need a bit of a controller. They need a bit of a CFO, but they don't need a full. And so I just had this series of aha moments. And the kind of the funny story is I was on the phone with my old director of sales for my manufacturing business. And I was telling her, like, I'm just frustrated. If I could just get Anna, I could put her into these businesses and I could just fix everything. And she's like, have you talked to Anna? Because Anna's not happy right now. So I ended up talking to Anna. I said, don't quit your job. Here's what I'm thinking. She called me 2 weeks later, said, I quit my job. I'm like, I guess we're doing this. So, I mean, that was the first evolution. And obviously we evolved over time, but you know, we provide full outsource solutions focused on service-based businesses between about 1 and 10 million in revenue. Below 1 million, you know, quite honestly, they don't really have the resources to afford our service. Over 10 million, they start to have enough resources that depending on the complexity, they may need a little bit more than what we offer. So we just fill this niche that's kind of that exact space where it's these entrepreneurs that have been doing it despite a stuck point in finance. So that's exactly what we do.
Very interesting. So when did you start Shift Financial? How long ago?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's in the 5-year-ish range, 4-ish, okay. 5 years, somewhere in there. I'd have to look up exactly, you know, how time goes. And the last year and a half, I don't know what happened in that period.
So are most of your clients in the Vancouver area?
Yeah, no, we're fully remote. So we do like, we don't do any on-site visits. We have clients across Canada and the US.
Okay,
yeah, awesome. So we're not limited on that.
I love that virtual CFO model.
Yeah. And the one of the things that we do, like we've actually developed our own software, not for any of the bookkeeping side. We'll leverage the existing technologies in bookkeeping automation. There's lots out there. I don't need to compete with that. But I hate reporting that, the standardized reporting that comes out of pretty much any accounting software. So we've designed to suck out of specifically QuickBooks, because that tends to be our biggest segment, and then basically automate the reporting package. There's a bunch of setup work to do, but once it's set up, it delivers information for the entrepreneur in that way that's just simple and intuitive. You know, like we were talking about, they don't understand how to read a P&L. So let's give them something they do understand. A lot of data visualization, a lot of extracting of data that's just the most relevant to them. So that's sort of our full service package.
Awesome. Well, So, you know, in your experience of kind of starting it and growing, I imagine it's growing pretty quickly. A lot of the virtual CFO practices I've talked to have grown very rapidly. Mm-hmm. What's been surprising about your journey with the business so far?
Yeah, for us, it's kind of been steps. Like you say, we go through a rapid growth thing. And then, you know, there's always, like every business, you know, as you grow, you kind of find the holes and then fix the holes. I think the thing that surprised me the most, and, you know, we focus more on the outsourced full accounting. We're not pure CFO. I think we may talk about that in a minute. I can get into that. But the resistance, not only some entrepreneurs have to outsourcing, they feel like they have to have it in-house. And they think, and my surprise is they're not disciplined enough. You know, the inability to outsource is usually a function of the client not having the discipline to follow pretty standard process. And, so they're not submitting information we need. Like we're not mind readers. We can't do the job without it. And so we'll make it really simple. Take a picture on your phone, one click of a button if it needs to be allocated to a client or needs to be charged back to the client, whatever, and that's it. And they won't do that. And then we'll get the pushback like, hey, how come our numbers are late? It's like, because every week we give you a report that says the information we need. And if we don't get it, we can't get it to you on time. So like we'll hold them accountable. What surprises me is we hold our clients more accountable than they hold ourselves. And I've learned over time that those clients that struggle with the basic, because the stuff we need is pretty simple. Like we're not going to the moon here. We're doing accounting. It's not that complex from a bookkeeping perspective. There's a little bit of complexity in some businesses, but it's not that hard. And so You know, it's, I think of it like the bathroom in a restaurant. You know, you go to the a bathroom in a restaurant and it's disgusting. You're like, what's going on in the kitchen, right?
Right.
Well, if you can't do some basic procedures to keep accounting current, what's going on with the rest of the business? And that's sort of the lens. And I didn't realize that when I went in. You know, it's just that complete lack of discipline throughout the organization. And when we struggle to get the client on board with that, that's where things kind of start to fall apart.
So have you found that you sort of imposing some discipline on certain clients with accountability measures,
yeah,
does it help? Does that spread into other parts of the business? Does that discipline spread
out? So we've learned that we can't impose that. It either works, they're either going to accept that there's a discipline factor or they won't. And so we've actually put that into our screening process. And it's actually, we are not going to take on a client if the client, if the entrepreneur is the lead point of contact. We will only do it if there's a director of ops or an integrator, if you're on the EOS model, or an office manager and admin assistant. So we can go to them and they'll get it done. Because if it's the entrepreneur, they got better things to do than ask or answer the question, does this go on this job or this job?
So
we actually screen that out at the start, because if the entrepreneur isn't disciplined and we're dealing with them, there's no way, it just won't be successful.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. That's an interesting insight about the discipline, and I like the analogy with the restaurant.
The bathroom, it really, and we see it over and over and over. And so it's actually become more important for us to screen for the right type of fit. And we've learned sort of through our process, you know, if we don't get yeses to these 8 questions, one of which continues to move up in importance is, who is the lead point of contact on your side? Not the entrepreneur.
No, it makes sense. So let's talk about your model. You said, you know, we're not fully fractional CFO. Yeah. Can you speak to that a little bit? And what is the sort of mix?
So to be honest, I would choose to not be in bookkeeping if I could be, but we haven't found a solution where we can only do advisory without also handling the books, because frankly, we just see it done so badly so often. So if we can't do the whole thing, we can't trust it. We can't, garbage in, garbage out. We all know that. And then when it comes to CFO, the other thing that concerns me, so like, I know we can absolutely process the bookkeeping and controller functions. We can run quality assurance around it. We can automate, like our software automates a lot of that in terms of exception reports. If you're familiar with tax software, you know, like Tax Prep has those, or kind of any tax software. Oh, there was income from this source last year. It's not in, double check. So like, we've built in our software a lot of the exception reports and like, this doesn't look right, where, because just so many things can slip through the cracks. So we can really processize that in our business. The CFO part for me, you know, like what we do is part science and part art, right? The science is all of the rules and stuff that we have to follow. And there is some judgment around it, but the art is how we analyze it. And the problem for me is actually standardizing the art form, as opposed to hiring a bunch of, you know, if I can, seasoned people with gray hair to go out and give advice. All I can really do is trust that they know what they're doing. It's really hard for me to go in and actually have absolute certainty that they're performing at a certain standard, right? One of our core values is crush it. So I don't want to just be like, oh, you're a seasoned CFO and off you go and put you in a dozen clients and not really know what level of standard they're at. I can do that with our controllers. I can do that with our bookkeepers. I can do that with our reporting tool, but not with the general strategic advice. So that's where I've actually shied away from that, because I'm so focused on making sure I don't ever want people to come back and say, we didn't deliver at a certain standard. Yes, we did. And here's the evidence. Really, I haven't figured out how to do that on the CFO side yet. I'm open to ideas. If you or any listeners have it, shoot me a message. Love to have that conversation.
Yeah. I kind of like the cohort idea. You know, we launched Accounting Practice Academy with a big cohort component. And, you know, you were talking about Myo before we started here today. And, you know, just collaborating, maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know. that's my idea for you. It's like, maybe get your clients to collaborate with each other, figure out some of these.
That's almost have a, yeah, I yeah. hadn't thought of that. That's actually a super interesting idea. Win, thank you.
Hope it works out for you. Let me know if it does or not, but.
You're in for a percentage, don't worry. I got you covered.
Well, so, you know, looking at the industry of sort of cloud-based outsourced CFO, what are you seeing mistakes that other companies are making?
Yeah, that's a super interesting one that I like to spend a lot of time on. I think the biggest mistake that's happening out there is people assuming that this industry is going to be this industry. I think this industry doesn't, like my current business, I will put my hand up and say it's got 5, 7, maybe 10 years left. We know the rate of acceleration of technology. I think it's a little bit slower in accounting. I think it's slower because of the number of disparate systems people are using. And like, because we've developed our own software, I know that every time we take on a new client, they have a different software. We have to create those connections. This API isn't that good. That API doesn't have the information we need, and we have to do all these workarounds. But the reality is the rate of automation is improving. We all know that the disruption is happening in the accounting space. And I think I see a lot of businesses creating pure bookkeeping outsourced. And they're cheaper, and that's fine. But every day, another step of that bookkeeping is being automated. So unless we're thinking, so to me, it becomes about what's the value add we're creating that is going to be harder and harder to outsource and automate. So yes, CFO stuff, but there's a lot of people working out there, you know, automating the analytics, automating the key insight out of the business. So right. I think unless I'm seeing people setting up pure bookkeeping outsourced companies, yeah, I just don't think that's around that long.
Yeah,
that's a blockbuster problem, right?
Right. Now, I it'll be interesting to see how fast the technology moves. You know, the promise of a lot of things, a lot of technology in the past, you see these big promises. I mean, the internet. When the internet came out in the 90s, they had this vision of how it was going to look, but it took 20 years for that to actually occur.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's not that important in our lives anyway, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's going to be a very disruptive period in the CPA world, the next 10 years for sure.
Yeah. And I think for more of the conventional, like in terms of the audit firms and that type of thing, like, you know, a lot of the audit stuff is going to be able to done automatically and through using technologies, using AI. Tax returns are being prepared more and more in an automated sense. And I think for me, like that's something I'm trying to embrace. I'm not trying to run away from. A lot of these firms are also using a lot of overseas to make it more cost effective, but that's going to be superseded by the technology moving even faster than being able to do it overseas. So to me, again, that's not something I'm interested in participating in creating. Like there's billions of dollars going into automation technology right now. Yeah. To me, the more interesting path is to look at how to create a space to deliver and analyze and create information, decision-making information for business leaders that's intuitive and simple.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about financial statements. They care about the stories inside the financial statements.
Right.
And that's what the automation isn't focused on right now entirely. A lot of it's focused on how to actually just streamline what we already do. We have to actually take it to the next level. Because I think if I may, and I think you'll hopefully agree that as an industry, I think, you know, we've failed in some way to really extract those stories in a way that's simple and intuitive for entrepreneurs. We as accountants often think entrepreneurs are sophisticated enough to do it themselves, and they're just not, in my opinion.
No, I mean, a lot of them are focused on sales and growth, and they're not thinking about
which is what they should be focused on.
Exactly, and the financials, they just need quick information that they can use, right? Well, as far as the automation, what companies do you feel like are creating that sort of technology? What are the companies to watch? I know Jeff Bezos just got into Pilot, or he's one of the major backers of Pilot.
Some like $1 billion valuation or something.
Yes, which is, but they're already kind of making some rookie mistakes, which I wouldn't, you know, I was kind of surprised of some of the things on their model, but what are some to watch? Where's the AI coming from?
Yeah, so I mean, a chunk of it's coming just from, you know, the Intuits and the Sages and that kind of thing. They're doing a lot of that work as well. One interesting company I like, and I've had some really interesting conversations with them, is called BotKeeper. And that's really more at the pure bookkeeping level. And they're using AI to auto-code and those types of things. Obviously, the optical reader stuff, that's pretty ubiquitous for bookkeeping right now. I really like BotKeeper. I like their model. I like what their underlying intention is, because, and I've talked to the owner directly, super interesting guy. And when we're talking about it, he goes, I don't want to grow this thing to sell it to an accounting firm so that they can use the technology. I'm only going to sell it if, you know, as and when it comes time to sell, so that whoever takes it on, with the intention of making it available broadly, because it's part of a vision of creating a better bookkeeping world out there. So that's one I like. And I have another, I have a meeting booked in the next week or two with a company whose name I'm going to not remember, embarrassingly. I met them a couple years ago at the QuickBooks conference, and they were kind of one of two booths there that was really promoting automation in account and bookkeeping. And so I had a good chat with them there, and just with everything that's gone on in the last little while, kind of lost touch. We've reconnected. I remember them because they gave out t-shirts and on the front that accounting is fun, and they capitalized the AI. So that's why I remember them. But
yeah, well, it'll come to you as soon as we end the podcast, probably.
Yeah, I'll shout it out when it comes
to me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, are you going to the AICP Engage conference by chance?
I am not. I'm not, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I've got about 40 conferences. I'm now that conferences are back, I'm like looking at my calendar going, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Conference every other week.
Yeah. It's it's good to be back to those. If you were to talk to somebody who was starting a practice just from scratch, just coming into the industry cold. What advice would you give them? What would you tell them about the industry and what to do?
Well, I'd tell them to avoid all the mistakes I made. I think we've really touched on it. I think the idea would be, don't come into this industry because you expect to be an outsourced accounting solution for the next 20 years. There is going to be continued and ongoing downward price pressure as automation continues. I choose not to participate in the race to the bottom. Full disclosure, we're a premium price provider because I believe we provide premium service, and we really focus on information that's simple and intuitive to make decisions to change the business and make it more profitable. If you're coming in just purely to become an outsourced accounting, I think you will be done very quickly. You may make some money in the short term, you know, if you've got some really good SEO and AdWords and all that kind of stuff, and you can get people to your website and you can close them and you do it quickly and you do a good job of actually executing, because you still have to execute. It's not like you just snap. Onboarding every new client is a project, you know? And I think that race to the bottom and that race to just be purely outsourced accounting, for me, is a failing model. So I would advise against doing that, unless it's a stepping stone to something bigger in the future.
Yeah, no, I think that's good advice. The execution is true. We've sold a lot of cloud firms in the past few years, and that's, you know, people who are founders of those companies, they tend to be good salespeople. They tend to be good with growth, and that's their focus. And the execution sometimes is where they grow to a certain point, and then their business becomes very difficult to manage for them. So.
Yeah, they themselves may not be the execution side of things. You know, kind of the flip side to what you were talking about, the advice for somebody coming into the industry, the advice I give to people who are considering an outsourced accounting solution is, you know, ask them for their latest NPS score or whatever they do for customer satisfaction. If they're either not doing an NPS score or they don't have any way to say, look, our customers are happy at X out of 10, run away. Like, you need to be able to be there saying, you know, we've got an 8, 9, or 10 average. Our last one, we're actually in the middle of one right now. Our last one in December, I think we do it twice a year and we were at 94 out of 100. If you can't be at that service offering, your churn rate's going to be too high. You're going to be on the phone dealing with unhappy clients all the time. You know, like the execution, like, it's not the most complicated business in the world. Trust me, my manufacturing businesses was 10 times more complicated than my current business, but it's got to be done right. And there's significant downstream impact by screwing up somebody's month end.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Books. Are you a big reader? You got any good book recommendations?
Yeah. You know, I love that question. I read a lot and I sometimes struggle with it because I end up, it always tends to be the last book I read, but there's one that sticks out to me that I kind of, if I don't refer back to it, I think about it, called of course it just fell off my tongue. Benjamin Hardy, Willpower Doesn't Work.
Yes. I've read that.
Okay. I love it. And for those that haven't, that are listening, you know, the rough idea is, you know, willpower is a muscle. And you can train your muscle just like you can train your body. And no matter how fit you are, eventually your muscles fatigue and they fail. And so, you know, the classic example that I love is, you know, there's, if there's a fresh basket of beautifully baked cookies, you know, let's say you're in an office environment, it's on the front desk. Every time you walked out of the front desk, you have to be like, I don't see it, you know, like, no. Yeah. And you can avoid it a bunch of times. And the more willpower you have, the more likely you're going to say no. But then you just have a tough meeting, or, you know, there's something going on with a staff member, or you lose a new deal, or you're in a bad mood and you walk by and you grab the damn cookie, because eventually your willpower will fail. It's just a human trait. So the idea with willpower doesn't work is to set up your environment for success. You can't see it here, but I have like a stand-up treadmill under my desk. I actually have some dumbbells here, and that's just the fitness side of things. I've set my bedroom up to optimize for sleep. You know, I've set my kitchen up so I don't have cookies on the counter. There's fruit on the counter, so I don't eat cookies. Let's not get into the debate about is fructose the same thing, whatever. I'm not going to have that argument. So just what are all of the different elements in our lifestyle that support what we're trying to create in our life, and actually just make that the natural environment so we don't have to use our willpower to do the things that we want to do in our life. And we're not sitting there at 10 o'clock at night going, oh man, I didn't X, Y, and Z, or oh man, I did X, Y, and Z. That's why I really love that book, because it's more about the lifestyle and how we show up. Accounting's great, but you know, we only have one life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good because so many of our behaviors are kind of mindless. You know, you mindlessly eat the cookie or the fruit, whatever you put in, right? So
The one I'm about to start, which came highly recommended by one of my favorite people in the world, is called Moonwalking with Einstein.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've heard that. It's funny. Amazon, which is super reliable, it was ordered a while ago, and we had to cancel it, and I just downloaded the audiobook so I can listen to it over the next week or so. But I've heard it's quite brilliant. We're doing it with my company as a book club right now. It's actually quite new. We only started a company book club. So whoever wanted to sign up, we'll send them a book and then we'll get together and have a conversation. So I can update you on if that one's my new recommendation, but that's the next book on my list.
Yeah, that's good. I read a book about Einstein, biography by, I can't remember the author's name. He wrote a biography about Steve Jobs, Benjamin Franklin. I can't remember his name, but anyway, the one about Einstein was really good. It's very interesting. So maybe that'll be a good book for you.
Yeah. Okay. My list always growing. So I'll, like you, I'm always looking for the next recommendation.
Yeah. Well, we're wrapping up here. Just a couple more quick questions.
Sure.
You've given us a lot of great advice so far. Any one little bit that you want to add to that, a little life lesson that you want to share with our listeners?
You know, just to circle back, because you said the same thing at the beginning that I said, or you resonated with kind of not loving the accounting experience early on, and choosing a different path. But here we are both back in the space. And to me, it was kind of all of those things that I got stuck at and all of the things that I heard other entrepreneurs frustrated about and my own frustrations with accounting, all of those have led me to where I'm going. And and even in the moment of when I'm unhappy with what I'm doing, I love to think about, okay, if I don't like this, other people don't like this, and what can we do? So I've already in my mind got mapped out the company that I'm going to be starting after Shift and concurrently with Shift to actually solve some of those frustrations that I and others have. And so it's kind of like, the obstacle is the way. Is that Ryan Holiday?
I think you're right. I think that is the author.
You know, and it's talking about, okay, well, if it sucks for me, if it sucks for other people, that's an opportunity as much as it is a frustration. Yep. And so all of my collective experiences of struggling as an accountant, and particularly early struggling as an entrepreneur to figure it out, because that's not an easy gig. You know, and my head is thicker than most. So, you know, I took me a few more years to learn the hard lessons. And so like taking all of those struggles to actually create a very clear vision that I have, what I want to create, not only with Shift, but with the next company after Shift, which is really more of a marketplace and a clearinghouse of financial information and experts and those needing it. I'm not big on advice. I mean, maybe that comes from years of being an EO and sharing experience rather than advice, as you well know. But, you know, kind of the takeaway for me is just those moments of stuckness, frustration, grossness, you know, peeling back that layer and making some space from it. It's like, what can I make out of this? And when I think about almost anything good that happens in my life, it came out of something I didn't like and I made a different choice.
Yep. The obstacle is the way. I mean, it's the raw material. So very good. Nice.
What is the saying? There's no I'm going to screw up the saying, but it's like, you know, a smooth sea never made a good sailor or something like that. Right.
Yeah. That's good. Well, what's the best way for people to follow you and connect with you online?
Yeah. Online. I mean, I've gotten a lot more active online in the last little while. So, LinkedIn, Spencer Shainin, spelled Shainin, Shainin. That's the easiest way to remember. LinkedIn is pretty active. Facebook, we do quite a bit of posting there as well. Mostly similar posts on Facebook and LinkedIn. And then our website, shiftfinancial.co. And if you shoot me an email, spencer@shiftfinancial.co, not .com, .co. We can add you to our newsletter and you can get that information. Awesome. The reason it's .co, not .com is because somebody stole the .com and is holding it for ransom. And I refuse to pay that. To me, that's so dirty. And I just refuse to pay. So,
Good
so if you're, you. If you're listening and you own it, you're not getting money from me. So carry on. Fill your boots.
Awesome. Well, thanks for all of this great insight. Love what you're doing in the space. Keep doing it. Looking forward to your next company.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed the chat and I got a couple of great nuggets from you out of it. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for listening to the Accountant's Flight Plan Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please follow us so that you can get updates when new episodes are released and share our podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can also follow Poe Group Advisors on social media. Please visit our website for more information at poegroupadvisors.com.